government and the country. I made a decision believing that the skills of both sets of customers will enhance liberalism in their respective new portfolios.
You're going to define a herd. What does it mean?
No, we're going to come, there's a whole lot of
submission
okay. on that.
Okay. I suppose at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter where it is, as long as it's there.
I think the point is making is more a matter of convenience than anything else. If you want to discover what the law states around,
you tend to
look at this Criminal Law Amendment Act, and you tend to forget that there might be an amendment act with only one substantive clause, which would be the transitional provision.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
You want that? I mean, you don't really want that either. Why don't you put it back in that other thing? Put it back in the what you've got savings clause. So you were going to do it as a 54?
Yeah, we were going to do it as 53 plus. I don't remember yet. We had it there. Yeah, it was 6, I think.
But all of these transitional provisions that you've got under 53 now have basically served their purpose. Is that right?
Yes.
But you still want to keep them. Because the other thing you could do is just replace it.
Yeah, one could do that, Chair. It's really also a matter of legal certainty. I cannot, for example, say that none of these appeals are not still pending. And if they are still pending or anything is left to be decided, those judges will have to revert to the tax. And it's rather annoying if you revert to tax and say, but I'm now dealing with a provision that's been appealed. That will cause them to go back to those three
But then what you do is, the version that I've got of the Act says 53.3 savings. Why is that? What is the savings clause? Is it 53? Or is it 53.3?
No, 53 savings clause.
Okay. Then what you do is, and then you've got a sub.
And the trust demonstrated by government.
Thank you, Mr. Majid, for sitting through a long list recent statement. We will start with our favorite sit in the country, Cape Town, and we will take three questions, please, from you, and we will come back to our most favorite city, Durban, and of course, that is Pretoria, and we will take three questions from you as well.
Okay, Anna, and then Wynne.
Good morning, Minister. Anna Majavu from Soweto. I've got a couple of questions. The first is regarding the transfer of Bernie Peterson to sport. You said that the former DG of sport would best expedite the transformation of correctional services. So, I mean, can you explain why she is better positioned to work in correctional services than Peterson? I mean, is there some inadequacy that he was displaying that led you to decide that the former DG of sport would be better? And then just a second question, can I get an update on the 11,000 awaiting trial detainees who have been granted bail but can't afford it? In the last briefing, the Deputy Justice Minister Johnny DeLange said that this group of people should be released. They shouldn't still be in prison. So are they still in prison? If they are, when are they due to be released? Thanks.
Wyndham Hartley from Business Day. Could you bring us up to speed, please, on the situation regarding parole for Mr. Clive Darby Lewis and whether or not the views of the Harney family are going to hold sway?
Morning, you all, my fellow from the Sunday Times.
Excuse me, can we keep it for now to those three questions? I will come back to you. Just hold it for a second, and then we will deal with these, in responding to those questions, and then we'll get back to you. Thanks. Deputy Minister Delano will take us to the first one.
Quite correct about the 11,000 detainees we found in the prison. As we said to you, we are using the months of October and November, starting with the process of trying to take these persons back to the court and then getting them released. I don't have the details with me now exactly how far we are with the process, but I could update that at any time if you need it. It is obviously a difficult process. People are spread all over the country. They have to be taken to different forms. They have to prepare papers and all those things. But to assure you that the process is ahead, it's part of our whole audit of the ATDs, and these are our first priorities. The person who failed to be released off first. Once we finish with them, we'll then move on to those that will stay in prison and how we then expedite and get their cases forward. So I'm happy to tell you that that process is proceeding well, and I will give you further details if you can get through the MRI at any stage when we have that update before. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. The issue of Clive Darby Lewis is really before the court, and the court will take interview regard circumstances that make a decision. So we certainly don't want to interfere with the due process that is taking place, and we certainly do not wish to anticipate what the outcome would be. With regard to the first question, obviously, you know, I certainly don't have all the information before me, but I would imagine that there has been a constructive process between the two ministers concerned. It can be considered the strengths and weaknesses of each one of the members concerned. And as a result of this mutual consultation, a decision was taken. Would certainly represent the interest of the respective institution. I'm sorry, if I had more information, I would be able to provide that to you. Thank you very much.
We will take this one question that I was tagging from Cape Town, and then we'll close it there just for now, and then we'll come to Pretoria. Thanks, Steve. Let's have your question.
I'm Lebo, my fellow from the Sunday Times. With regard to the swapping of the two DGs, it is just, I don't know whether it's convenience to put it like it's convenience, because it is at the very same time that Commissioner Peterson was seen as being passing corruption in the department and even reporting his own minister to the Ethics Committee for not declaring a gift of a car. How does this help the perception out there of like the minister is being covered, government is shielding the minister from a corruption investigation by stopping the DG?
The explanation has been quite adequate that this transfer is blocked by any town covering any investigation. The Ethics Committee of Parliament will continue with its work. The transfer is purely on the interest of service delivery, and it's been done by consultation between the two ministers and the relevant issues. So the suggestion that this is a cover up for any corruption. It is not really founded, because those who are responsible for that type of investigation can continue.
Just to give you the assurance that we certainly would not interfere in any process with regard to any investigation, whether it involves a minister or otherwise. I
think the Joint Ethics Committee has a particular task with them, and they should carry out that task without any interference. That assurance should be to the public and to the media.
We will take a question from Vito and you first, and then we'll have a question from Victoria. And then we'll come back to go back to Cape Town.
Thanks so much. Legal Tom from Question for Minister Mutek. For Minister, you said that the SAPS has made significant progress in the investigation and prevention of ATM bombing. Now we are seeing this type of crime spreading to our neighboring countries. Will the SAPS assist such a country to clamp down on this type of crime?
From independent newspapers, this question goes to the Minister Chakra. There has been a lot of misunderstanding regarding what the department is doing with the private security industry, whether private security guards are going to be getting arresting powers or what kind of powers. If the Minister can just explain that part, what kind of consultation, what kind of help will the private security industry provide to the NPC? Everything possible. We partner with everything, not only the
private security company, anyone who will come on board and want to assist government and others to deal with crime and with good crime governance in South Africa will do it.
We'll take one last question from the Secretary and then we'll come back to this. Mr. Mutekwa, first and welcome, and it's a bit related. You say here that governance still remains committed to the 7% crime reduction annually. During the 15-year review that was recently released by government, it was said that there is concern about the fact that government hasn't been able to achieve those targets, especially over the last few years. Do you, is it also a concern to you? Do you feel that you need to step up the current program, maybe set up new initiatives to achieve those particular targets? And what are the areas that you feel that you need to focus on in terms of reducing crime? I know that they're doing a review that said, especially violent crime and aggravated crime, that is a particular concern.
On the issue of the target, seven percent, comparing it with other countries international or so that other countries could be target to 1%, not more to 2%. And I think it's appropriate because of the nature of the crime. Of course, we would be at a glance concerned with asking us to reaching the target we put for ourselves. At the same time, I do acknowledge that quite some ground to cover the consequences has been achieved, and therefore, I think that while we have not achieved the target, but we may be on the right track. As you say, mostly it's contact violence crime. It doesn't mean that other types of crime are not major contact, but that is distinguished from South Africa to any other country. And the partnership with community and the contact that made with private security and so forth is one such area we think we need to get to. The other area which we needed to pay attention to is the area of strengthening the armor of our training sector, as well as the general security. If you look at the proposal on the review of criminal justice system, you would see that we have been concerned with the process of preventing particular tactics. So we want to strengthen this. We also want to give support to those special teams which crack down particularly on violent crime, probably like cash in hand and ATM bonds, just to give them a more way of dealing with it. And we think if we follow some of the aspects, we'll be able to even do.
Claire Mellis from the Associated Press. I just have a question on the DSO and SAPS amalgamation. What sort of numbers are we talking about of staff in the new DSO? And do you have any indication about how many members of the DSO have indicated they will actually quit and leave altogether?
Anna?
It's Anna from Soweto. Is the new partnership with private security just for the suburbs, or will residents of informal settlements who suffer a lot of house robberies and complain of slow response time from the police also benefit from this?
Wyndham Hartley again. excuse me, Minister Mthethwa the other day on the radio, a police spokesman said that the police would crack down on hate speech at political rallies. Could you tell us if any arrests have been made from the people who said kill Lakota, and what other measures will you take to ensure that political violence doesn't happen?
Thank you, Peter.
Well, I'll deal with the issue of just the direct system. We've already had a conversation, my colleague and I, as you might well be aware, we are responsible for the development of a mechanism that is appropriate. The unit would be obviously located within the Department of State and Security, and therefore decisions in regard to the numbers that have to be made by the Minister of State and Security. What we have resolved is that we should do that sooner rather than later. We should determine precisely how large the unit should be, how many people are going to be derived or come from the South African Police Service, particularly from the specialized unit, and how many from the National Prosecuting Authority. The intention here is to integrate it in a way that is almost, that is without any difficulty whatsoever. So rather than waiting for the proclamation of the legislation, we have decided jointly that this process should start taking place immediately, and that should be a consultative process that involves both the Department of Safety and Security and the Department, the National Prosecuting Authority. So the consultation has commenced. We do believe that reasonably soon we will be able to indicate precisely what the nature and size of this unit would be for purposes of establishing efficiency. Thank you. On the issue of kind of security, we see this as a pilot project, so to speak. We would want to extend the other parts of the province, and both in Japan and in Europe as well. It has been reported that so far the enthusiasm and enterprise that parts of the country or the area is concerned, we hope that there are challenges which we are dealing with internally, such as particularly when we look at the climate security, that this partnership would include people who are going to think and hear in terms of security.
On the down on the hate speech in the political rally. The cluster really will really appeal to all South Africans to observe tolerance and avoid provocation in those meetings or rallies wherever they make it out in the country. Because we've got electoral laws which define the code of conduct which is observed as political party. Oh yes, those who then brief those regulations that set down in terms of electoral laws then have to take the wrong answer of the law. But we really appeal to the political leaders of all the parties to instill it in their followers that there must be tolerance and avoid provocation.
Sorry, this is Claire from Cape Town again. Part of my question wasn't answered on have you any indication how many members of the DSO have indicated they will quit?
Sorry, another follow-up, please.
Yes?
I did ask whether or not there were people chanting hate speech on national television. Are they being investigated and will they be arrested?
The Minister of Intelligence started where we thought we needed to start with the cluster. But first and foremost, they have to be away from us, which calls upon everybody, all stakeholders, all parties concerned, particularly the leadership of police together with IDP and the Minister of Intelligence, to please refrain from any activity which would be construed as an act of provocation. Now, we thought we needed to start there, we needed to talk to the public and thank them for that. We didn't think that it was, you know, these are political matters. People would come with something else on this. We can't, we couldn't have done anything before that. But you would know that there would be heightened competition around the time. All what we are emphasizing is any possibility of provocation around the provocation. At the point, nobody has been tied on any.
We're back in Pretoria, we're coming back now, not Cape Town.
I think your question is directed to the president. The NC president lately in the meeting which he addresses, he always talks about a lot of this country has been criminal friendly and that they don't buy. Can I get a comment from you as to what you make of this? Could you see some change in the law to make it buy good in favor?
Any other
from Pretoria for the moment, so if you take your time. Are we okay here? Okay. I will let Mr. Cesar and Mr. Cesar take it off. Well, seriously, you know, we have the problem with serious crimes, and certainly the question of how we apply the law in terms of investigation and prosecution. We shouldn't think or deem to be regarding serious criminal offense as being treated as offenders, as being treated leniently. We do have, within the array of laws that are available, minimum sentences for serious crimes involving serious violent crimes, murder, rape, etc. And these have to be applied. So it's really up to the judicial officer to exercise and apply the law in the appropriate measure. With regard to constitutional rights, these are entrenched in the Constitution, whether you speak about perpetrators or suspect offenders, I think it has to be protected and we have a responsibility to do so. I think the appeal by the President of the African National Congress is really to say, let's take the issue of crime seriously. It's a cancer, it's something, a pandemic, it's something that affects society, stability, peace and security. And certainly the entire criminal justice system, from the police service, to the prosecution authorities, to the judicial officers in their exercising their discretion should take this as a serious challenge. So I think that appeal is interpreted as a comprehensive appeal or comprehensive response to the issue of serious crime. It certainly is not intended to compromise any rights that are enshrined in the Constitution. Thank you.
Can I just add to what the you know, I think one must look at the President's comment always in context. The President at no stage has something to do with that he wants us to undermine the Constitution, the constitutional rights of the so what the President raises is a very legitimate issue. We've got a serious crime problem. What he's asking us, in the different mechanisms we have, obviously it's always to find a balance between human rights and what our mechanism is to deal with a particular problem. So what he's asking us, in every mechanism we have, let's use a simple example, like the right to remain silent. Our law as it stands now says that when you appear in court before the evidence is laid, you have the right to remain silent. When you're arrested, you have the right to remain silent. Now the question can be asked, is such a complete and absolute right to remain silent, is it something that is acceptable in all democracies? Now, you can go, for example, just study the United Kingdom, which I imagine most of us would think as a very advanced democracy. In that democracy, for example, they have put certain conditions attached to the right to remain silent. So there you can look at one example, at the Federal Reserve, for example. I don't know if that's a specific example you think of, but let's assume that that's one of them. Look at the way that we plead in court. Again, when we plead, we say you must plead to the case and tell us what your case is. Or then we say that you can keep quiet or if you want to. So we start the case off by starting on the basis of actually, again, not knowing anything. You go to all democracies in the world. They would actually create certain obligations to you, what you do at the time of pleading and so on. So I think that's the context. As I've always understood the president of the ANC when he raises these issues, is do we, on every mechanism we have, whether it's the right to remain silent, whether it's pleading, whether it's anything else, do we have the right balances, and particularly considering our problems we have with Crimea, and do we have the right balance between human rights and that issue? And it's a very valid debate. It's a very good debate that we should be having. Because also in that process, we of course educate ourselves about what kind of democracy we have. So I think the context in which the president raises it is very, very important.
We will take another question from Victoria.
I'd like to ask Mr. 30, whether traditional leaders are going to go to law school. What kind of training will they undergo to enhance the justice system? How long will it be? What power do they have? Do they know the constitution in and out? The pilot project and so forth. That's one of the questions.
Thank you very much for the question. I think it's a very important question. What we can affirm is certainly that we recognize the role that traditional leaders have played in the past and continue to play. It's not a revival of traditional courts. They do exist in our current conception. What is important is, given the fact that we are constitutional democracy, right, that our decisions must be informed by a Bill of Rights, that this knowledge and understanding of the law as well as the Constitution becomes very critical. They would be really arbiters. Conflict that they deal with conflict resolution. These are skills that can be acquired through the Justice College. And so what we would have to develop as a result of the law is the appropriate curriculum, which would obviously not mean the threshold must be not so high to say that before you could actually decide in a court of that nature that you should have a degree or you should have the equivalent of a judicial officer. Because the nature of the offenses that they're going to deal with would be very, very light offenses, not serious offenses. And the civil disputes have limitations in terms of discretion. Currently, for example, we have attorneys who serve voluntarily in our court main court. They're not judicial officers, but they are able to resolve disputes. Now, the intention here is really to infuse them an understanding of the human rights through a training program, which will certainly be provided for in the Justice College, to also begin to assist diagnostically what the depth of their understanding and knowledge are of this issue. So one would have to develop a curriculum that is appropriate in a certain sense. What I can tell you is that the work has already started there. There would be a compulsory process with the fact traditional leaders who in fact will be carrying out this task on behalf of the community and on behalf of the Department of Justice to ensure that when it does occur, it occurs in a manner that is consistent with the public interest and also consistent with the Bill of Rights. So thank you very much for that very important question. It's something that we should be paying attention to as we implement.
Okay, Tom?
In case of the final round of two questions.
Good morning, Minister. Liesel de Lange from Die Burger. Just a follow-up on one of the questions there. Can we take it that people have now been warned about inciting violence at political gatherings, and that from now on some steps would be taken and people might be investigated if they make themselves guilty of such conduct? And perhaps just a bit more clarity on the the arrangement between the Honeydew Police and the private security companies, exactly how they will be working together, please.
I'm Fran Landy from Agence France-Presse. My question actually ties into Liesl's last question. You spoke quite broadly about the partnerships and cooperation between SAPS and the private security industry. Is it possible to have some practical examples of how this might actually play out, and also what challenges are foreseen in this? Thank you.
Thanks,
Now, obviously, if there's any complaint from any person about the Islamic language, the police will have a duty to investigate. And as I said previously, the parties that we go to the election mode will have to also sign the code of conduct, and that there's a penalty for those who breach that code of conduct and the laws of the country. So, anyone who will continue to read the code or read the complaint, we have a responsibility to make sure that there's a proper investigation and there's a proper prosecution.
Thank you very much, and I understand your concern, given the fact that the elections are in it, the kind of responsibility that political leaders have, ensuring that they want the forces to carry themselves out in a very responsible way. We can't be decided in case of or any form of violence at all. The equality legislation itself provides for it, but in our opinion, this is not good enough. We have already prepared draft legislation that deals specifically with hate speech, and it's already been set up for public comment. I think one of the immediate and urgent responsibilities of the new administration would be to ensure that this matter is clearly introduced to Parliament as soon as possible. So the draft legislation is available, there has been public comment, and when I've had a look at it, I personally am satisfied with it, but given the time constraints and the limitations that we have for the remaining period, it might be difficult to finalize this legislation. However, you know, hate speech itself is in fact, there's a prohibition of, the freedom of expression is there, but the limitations in terms of hate speech is something that we have to look at very, very seriously, and indeed, the point that the Minister of Intelligence has made is a very significant point, that in the context of the election, clearly the legislation that deals with the election does make it an offense, and certainly I would imagine all subjects, all citizens would be entitled to that record for any contravention that they relevant. So political parties as well as individuals would be entitled to complain about, and there could be criminal prosecution arising from such complaints in the context of the natural laws that are available at this point in time.
Well, on the partnership, perhaps the first thing I would want to say that we would call upon all particularly in the journalistic system to assist in encouraging such partnerships. That practically, the memorandum of understanding between the police station in Honeydew and Lisbon, as an example, and different private security companies, would be dealing with some specific issues. One of which is the training of private security companies on time interpretation, basic things like this. That would include, because part of the system, unlike the police service, you may not be setting about the security interest of people in the private sector. The vetting and security agreement would be done. We hope to tap on the availability of resources that there is, which are always some of them you find in the areas in the public, particularly from the private security. The utilization of joint radio control, for instance. So it's quite a comprehensive partnership which needs to be looked into in practice.
perhaps I need to say that one charism which makes us want to do this thing, particularly in that partnership, is the fact that when it comes to the personnel, because if you look at ratio of South Africa, you have a colleague, one is to 300 and I think that on the center of 2002, surely you have more than that in South Africa today. And even with the program of recruiting 10,000 police personnel every year, is not actually making a significant change in the matter. This is a particular violent trend and contact trend. So this partnership would be paid by and large and controlled by the staff themselves. But we also acknowledge that numerically, the private security companies are more than staff to a national. If you look at 670,000 personnel, take out about 70,000, which are not uniformed policemen and women, you left around about 95,000-98,000. So these are the people we expect visibility from them in the country, and we also expect some visibility from them around the border. So this is how practically this thing is going to be unfolding, which will be launching, as I say, as a pilot project. Let's see how successful it is and how to take it out there, particularly around this type of
one last question.
Yes.
I'd just like to know whether this partnership involves any exchange of funds from government to the company, since they are more than the 38 members. And my second question is, the ANC president said yesterday that SAPS members, police, should be actually paid more than what they should be paid now, because they chase criminals with more money than they have. Do you believe that more money will change our police service?
Well, thank you. The issue of funds cannot arise at this point, because staff are funded by through the public sector. There is no way that they will be tampering with that without the public knowing. And for that to happen, we would have to have a legislative process in place to be in that. The issue of the payment of staff, firstly, I would want to highlight a point which makes us to arrive at a conclusion that we need to certain instances release the police, even to apply strong arm tactics to some of the criminality in the country. Because if you look particularly for the past week, there's more than 8 police personnel who have been met in on duty trying to apprehend criminals. Now, it is important coming from us and we definitely wouldn't expect police facing that kind of situation to take out some human rights cuts and to say that to the criminals. They have to stop supervising the criminals. Because of the dangerous situation, police are looking for what? Generally, they have been informed not only from the president of the ANC, but people have said, we need to take care of our colleagues because they work under serious and difficult, also dangerous situations. We support them, but you see, we have to do everything within the public service administration and the cost of the But there is an intention, there is a need for us to boost the morale of the police. And this is the point we are emphasizing.
the fact that people have identified some few rock elements in the police should not change the entire strategy. And we must, at this point, commend some of the steps taken by police who are their fellow policemen, particularly men, who have been involved in some kind of thing.
Thank you very much. Just 2 points. I will meet you, and we will meet again next week, Friday, where we will have the governance and administration cluster briefing. And coming back to this particular cluster, there will be a display of technology, new technology for crowd control. And this is in conjunction with the French colleague, the French government colleague. And the best place at the